Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports every single Wednesday, and we don't do it exactly like most of the other sports shows do. Try to make you laugh maybe once or twice. We try to apply a little bit of common sense to the world of sports that, as bizarre as it is, I know we say common sense, it's not all that common from what I can tell, especially not in the world of sports. Hey, I have to say thank you, first and foremost, for tuning in. We appreciate you being here. Glad that you are joining us for another episode of The Daily Dose. I know there are a number of you out there that do listen every week. I want to say thank you to you. I really do appreciate it. And I would love if you would recommend the podcast to someone. Anyone, whoever it might be. Maybe it's your mailman. Maybe it's the person that washes your dog. Maybe it's family. Maybe it's friends. Maybe it's someone you work with. You know, one thing you can do, and you can tell them that they can find the podcast pretty much anywhere. You can tell them to go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play, Audio Boom. If you go over to Blog Talk Radio, you will get the episodes as soon as they go live. You'll get them a little bit before everyone else, and you can find all of our episodes over there. You can go to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, and while you're over there, you'll also see some articles that are over there that go up every single week. They're Daily Dose style, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek over at the Daily Dose, but you will enjoy the articles over there. The article that went up this week, let's see, Joe Mixon, running back from Oklahoma, had an article go up about Joe Mixon that you might want to check out. You know, if you're looking to share the podcast, maybe you say, I'd like to share the podcast. Honestly, I would. But I'm not going over to my coworker's desk and saying, hey, do you know this podcast? I get it. I understand. I feel your pain. I wouldn't do it either. But here's one thing you can do. Wherever it is that you listen to the podcast, if you just click share, there's usually a little share button. If you click share, you enter their email address. It actually will send it to the person. And you can just send them a podcast. All they've basically got to do is click on it. It'll open up in their app and they can listen to it right there and then. A really easy way to share the Daily Dose. We would appreciate that so much. Also, be sure to stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. Of course, Rogue Intel is a family of podcasts of which the Daily Dose is a member. You head over there, you'll find a few other podcasts that you're going to listen to every week. So you're going to want to make sure that you stop by rogueintel.com. Got a question? Got a comment? Maybe you've got some feedback for your show, or maybe you have an idea for a top five list. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also find us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, we will, of course, be recapping the first few rounds of the NCAA tournament. Going to take a look at maybe who did a little bit better than we thought, who did a little bit worse than we thought. We will also take a look at the Sweet 16 and maybe see if we can get an idea of how that Elite Eight is going to go. Why is it that March Madness is so crazy? I realize the March Madness this year, few less buzzer beaters, but still some crazy games, still some wild upsets, some things that we didn't expect. You know, there are reasons that March Madness actually is crazy. We're going to take a look at a few of those. The NFL is still signing free agents, and we will look at a few of those moves. And there are a few free agents out there that are not being signed just yet. We will have to discuss those players as well. The NBA is in the final stretch of their regular season, and we will look at a few possible playoff matchups. And be sure, as always, that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. It always seems to have a mind of its own. You never know which way it's going to go, and you certainly never want to miss it. You know, I got an email this last week from a loyal listener to the show, Mike out in SoCal, and he brought something to my attention that we've got to discuss here on The Dose. I'm not sure I want to go down this odd rabbit hole, but we've got to discuss this a little bit. Yes, listeners, right now, we are going to talk a little bit of soccer. Not much, but we are going to talk some soccer. So apparently, like I said, I didn't see this, but Mike sent me an article, and I had to kind of check into this and look at this. There is a story going on down in Brazil. Honestly, it's a little bit crazy. It sounds like something that would go on here in the States. It's kind of crazy. Okay, let me lay this out for you. We have a soccer goalie named Bruno. And from what I understand, he kind of goes by just Bruno. Like, I feel like we need a sound effect for Bruno.
Bruno the Magnificent.
Yeah, I like that. That sounds good. Okay, so after serving 7 years in prison for killing his ex-girlfriend, chopping her up into pieces, and feeding her to the dogs. No, I'm not joking. I'm dead serious. That is what the charges were. Brazilian goalie, now here's his full name, Bruno Fernandes de Souza, is back in the game, and he has been signed by a Brazilian professional team. Not joking. It's insane. In 2010, it seems
Bruno the Magnificent
was arrested and found guilty of homicide, kidnapping, and hiding the body of his ex-girlfriend. In all, there were 9 different people charged with torturing and murdering his girlfriend, who was trying to prove that he had fathered her son and that she was entitled to money.
Bruno the Magnificent
was convicted and sentenced to 22 years in prison. Here's the thing. The body was never found, but a cousin of
Bruno the Magnificent
says that he had helped
Bruno the Magnificent
dismember the body and fed the body to several dogs. However, due to some sort of court technicality,
Bruno the Magnificent
was released after serving just 7 years. Citizens in Brazil are actually signing a petition that
Bruno the Magnificent
should not be allowed to play. But his club owner says, hey, he served his time. What do you want us to do? This whole story, honestly, it is disturbing. It's a sad, sad statement of how if you play sports, you can get away with anything. We look at some of the different people in the sports world that have gotten away with some pretty major, significant things. Here's just another example. Crazy what is going on down in Brazil. And now they are signing a petition down there to see if they can get him removed from the game. And I just actually got some more news in here. What is this? New news breaking. Yeah, it looks like Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones is inquiring as to if Bruno can kick a football. And he says he can't put his finger on it. But there's just something about that young fella that I really like. Hey, let's talk a little bit of college hoops. Of course, Indiana fired their head coach Tom Crean. They waited to do it until the NCAA tournament actually started. I don't know why that was. I think they were kind of trying to keep that a little bit quiet. Oh, by the way, we fired a coach. Hope nobody notices. Now, who does Indiana hire? Is Indiana still a blue blood program? That's how we always think of the Hoosiers, isn't it? They're one of the big dogs out there. You know who they're going to go after. They're going to go after UCLA coach Steve Alford. Now, he has those Bobby Knight ties, and I know not everybody back in Indiana likes those Bobby Knight ties. But I think they're going to go after Steve Alford pretty hard. While he may have those ties, Steve Alford is never going to be confused with Bobby Knight. It's not the program he runs. It's not the way he operates. It's just not how he carries himself. So while he might have ties to Knight, he's not a Knight kind of guy, other than similar systems and that kind of thing. But he's not a Knight guy. He's not going to go out there screaming and yelling and grabbing kids and that kind of thing. Now, would Steve Alford leave UCLA? Is Indiana that big of a program that you would say, I'm leaving UCLA and I'm going back to Indiana? Of course not. Of course not. There's no way Steve Alford leaves UCLA. Are you kidding me? UCLA? There's no way he leaves for Indiana, right? Yeah, he's totally leaving UCLA. I've got some bad news for you. He is totally leaving UCLA, and I'll tell you why. As much of a great program as UCLA is, and it is, completely outdated facilities, they're not up to date. They're not one of the more modernized programs. They're still living back in the 60s and 70s with the way they've done business with their athletic programs. And don't forget this one key piece of information. And this is really, really key. Don't forget that UCLA asked Steve Alford last year to give back some money on his contract. Hey, you didn't have that great of a year. You should give us some money back. And he did it. Now, he might do it. And he might say all the right things. And he might smile and wave to the cameras and do all the right things. But make no mistake, he remembers that. I had one bad year. I had this recruiting class coming in right now, and we're making a run. And you can make a case that UCLA right now should be one of the favorites to win it all this year, and you asked me a year ago to give money back? You out of your mind? You don't get to just ask for money back. We have a contract. Yeah. Don't be surprised if Steve Alford leaves and goes back to Indiana. He's not going to forget that. I won't be surprised one bit to see Steve Alford leave and go to the University of Indiana. Why is it that March Madness is so crazy? It happens every year. We talked some last week about how every single year, March Madness manages to live up to the hype. And yes, we haven't seen the buzzer beaters so much this year, but every year we see upsets. Every year we see craziness. Every year there is March Madness. Why is the tournament so crazy? I want to talk just a little bit about some of the reasons why that tournament just is a crazy tournament that always, always lives up to the hype. Biggest reason, it's a single elimination tournament. This isn't the best of seven. Could South Carolina beat Duke in the best of seven? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. But you know what? They can beat them once. I do know that because I saw it. You don't have to be the best in a single elimination tournament. You just have to be the best that day. That's what makes it so great. That's what makes it so much fun. Imagine if basketball, if professional basketball, has single elimination games. We would lose our minds, wouldn't we? Baseball has that wild card single elimination game, and we all tune in to watch that, and it's baseball. But we all watch that. But I'll give you a few more reasons why March Madness always lives up to the hype. For one, there's weird start times, and that does affect your players. You might not think it does. But if you've got a 1 p.m. start time on the East Coast, that's a 10 a.m. start time for West Coast teams. Sounds like a minor thing, but a lot of these kids are like, man, I feel like I should just be eating breakfast, and now I'm supposed to be playing in this huge game that is a single elimination game that we could end our season on. Weird start times can affect you. How much prep time do you get? Do you get enough prep time? Usually, once you're into your conference play, like I know when I was coaching, we would play Wednesday night, we would play Friday night. We would play Wednesday night, we would play Friday night. A lot of these college teams are in that same sort of schedule. You prep and you prepare starting on Saturday. You at least start looking at that next team you're going to play. You start to scout, you start to break down film, you start to get some tendencies that they run, and then you practice and you prepare for that team. On these games in this tournament, you don't get all that prep time. Sometimes you're playing a team with one day of rest. And I've got news for you. They do have to rest. They do have to get off their feet. A lot of these teams, they might watch a little bit of film and then go out and play. You'll go out, you'll do a practice walkthrough. Here's some of the stuff they run. Here's some of the screens they set. Here's what they like to do defensively. Some of that. And then you got to go play. That's just how it is. Travel can change what you do, and travel can make for weird situations in the tournament as well. You're going to different locations. You're sleeping in different locations. You're going to maybe schools or venues that you're not used to staying at. When you're in conference, if I'm UCLA, I'm used to going to USC. I get that. I'm used to going to Washington. We all get ready for the Washington State or the Arizona or whoever it might be. But when you're in a tournament, you're going to different venues, staying in different hotels. Sometimes you're practicing in a high school gym. It's just a matter of what you get. Travel can change things. You get less sleep. Sometimes you have heavy legs. It doesn't always work that well. Matchups are a big part of this tournament and why it can go so sideways so fast. I might be a number 3 seed. We are the favorite. I'm matching up with an 11 seed. There's no way an 11 should beat me. But it's a bad matchup. They've got physical guards. My guards are a little bit more finesse. They like to pass. They like to move. They like to play on the perimeter. These guys are taking them down in the paint and beating them up. Oh, this is a horrible matchup for me. And everybody sits there and says, how could you be a 3 and lose to an 11? Oh, man, what's wrong with you? It's a horrible matchup. I might be able to get into a different bracket in a different region and roll all the way through and get clear to the final game. But that one team is a problem for me. And because of that, you get madness. That's kind of what you get. And then one of the biggest things that March Madness brings out, what kind of pressure are you going to be under? We might have seniors, seniors who have experience, seniors who are confident. And as a result, they go out and they play. We might have underclassmen. Maybe it's all new to them and they're sitting there going, oh man, we're not ready for this. But you know what? That can switch too. Because sometimes you can have underclassmen, and I don't know how else to say this, but they're kind of knuckleheads and they don't realize there's pressure. They're just like, oh, he's going on playing the game. It's really fun. And they're rolling and winning. Meanwhile, the seniors are the ones feeling the pressure because they're like, oh, this is our last chance. We've got to get this done. And they're squeezing the ball so tight it's slipping out of their hands and they're turning it over every single time. Who feels the pressure? Who plays with confidence? Those are the key things to March Madness. And so it's not an accident that March Madness sometimes has some of the crazy, crazy results. But those are a few reasons why they have some crazy results. The opening round of 64, few exciting games, not quite as crazy as we've seen in the past. And honestly, a lot of that is just because we didn't have any buzzer beaters. We had some upsets, but we didn't really have any buzzer beaters. The round of 32 to go to the Sweet 16, though, pretty exciting games. There were some really fun games in that round. I want to talk right now of what was better than we thought, what was worse than we thought. And I'll throw this question out right now. How's your bracket looking? The brackets are a little bit tough about right now, right? You have that first day and you're like, oh man, I'm doing good. 16 games, I got like 14 of them right. And the second day you're like, oh man, my bracket's still looking strong. And then third day, and oh yeah, I lost one of my final four teams. And then the next day, I lost my championship team, and your bracket just starts falling apart. Because we think we know how this tournament will go. And as the tournament starts to break out and it starts to be played out, we realize sometimes we've overestimated a little bit. Sometimes we've underestimated a little bit. Let's look at who was better than we thought and what's worse than we thought in this tournament so far. A little bit better than we thought. I got to give some credit to the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten got seven teams in, but we didn't really expect them to do anything, did we? The highest seed was, what, a four seed with Purdue, I think? Then Wisconsin beats the top seed Villanova. Purdue keeps winning. Michigan beats a number two seed. And all of those teams are going to the Sweet 16. Hey, even Northwestern was scrappy. They weren't happy just to make the tournament. They got a win, and they gave Gonzaga all they wanted. But the Big Ten was a little bit better, I think, than anyone thought it was. What was a little bit worse than we thought it was? I'd say it has to be those Vegas favorites, those blue blood programs. Few of them went down. Las Vegas set the odds for the tournament last week. Best odds to win it all. The Duke Blue Devils at 6-1. Gone. The Villanova Wildcats at 7.5-1. Gone. Even Louisville was 16-1. All those teams are gone. I've said this before. I will say it again. That's why you don't bet, people. Las Vegas doesn't keep building those big casinos by losing again and again. Never forget that. You can bet if you want. You're going to end up paying. A little bit better than we thought. A little bit better than we thought. I've got to give this to Headband Jesus. Who is Headband Jesus, you might ask? Have you seen West Virginia? West Virginia's Nathan Adrian looks kind of like if Jesus had played basketball, that's kind of what he'd look like. He'd have the headband on. He'd kind of look like this kid. But I really like the way Nathan Adrian plays. Does a lot of dirty work, gets rebounds, makes a lot of those hustle plays, diving into the bench. Yes, I realize West Virginia goes as Javon Carter goes, and it goes as far as that pressing defense goes. But Headband Jesus is a little bit better than I thought he was. I thought he was just kind of a guy out there taking up space. Does some good things for them. A little bit worse than we thought they would be in this tournament is the ACC. The ACC got 9 teams in, but so far in the tournament, they are just 7-8 in the games they have played. Take a look at the teams that are still there. Oh wait, North Carolina is the only team left in the ACC. Wake Forest, gone. Virginia, out. Florida State, out. Louisville, out. Virginia Tech, out. Miami, out. Notre Dame, out. And Duke, out. Yeah, I'd say the ACC was a little bit worse than what we thought they would be. A little bit better than we thought. Maybe this is just me. I thought when Oregon lost Chris Boucher, they would drop off because of that lack of depth. But hey, here they are in the Sweet 16. I got to give Oregon some credit. Now, to be fair, you've beaten number 14 Iona and number 11 Rhode Island. So don't get too excited. But they've gone farther than I thought they would. And for that, I'll give them some credit. A little bit worse than we thought. Got to be the refs. Gotta be those officials, doesn't it? Sometimes it's a little bit tough to watch some of the officiating that has gone on in this tournament. We've seen phantom taunting calls. We've seen missed goaltending. We've seen just a blatant no call, probably should be a block or a charge or a travel in that North Carolina game. I don't know what in the world that was. We've seen some delays to watch replays. I saw a delay to watch a replay while a kid's waiting to shoot a very, very big free throw, and he's got to just stand there and wait. Here's the thing. I know these guys have tough jobs. I genuinely sympathize. Sometimes it can be tough to watch. But I'm going to be honest. It's not their fault. And I know you see these coaches losing their minds. And I get it. I've been a coach and I've lost my mind. And I've seen that side. But it honestly, it's not the ref's fault. It really isn't. Let's think about this. Again, we're going to apply a little bit of common sense to March Madness. I know, sounds crazy. We're going to do it. How many really good college basketball officials are there in the country? Good college basketball refs, how many are there? 50? I doubt it. 40? Probably not. Probably more like 30. Something like that. Now, on Friday and Saturday, there were 32 games. See, there's three-person crews. I was told there would be no math here on the Daily Dose, but let me take off my shoes and count. That's 96 refs. What do we say? Maybe 30, maybe 40, and that's probably being real nice. Out of that, you've probably got 40, 50, maybe close to 60 refs that aren't so good. But they don't have a choice. You've got to cover all those games. It's no wonder we have missed calls. You know what they do? They take some of these good refs and they say, okay, you're going to lead a bad crew and you're going to lead a bad crew. They have to divide them all up so you have maybe one good ref on one crew out of three. You're going to have missed calls. We can complain all we want. You're going to have missed calls when there's that many games. That's just how it's going to be. A little bit worse than we thought. The refs, they've been tough. It's always tough. But I do have some sympathy for them because I understand it. There's just not enough great officials out there. You're going to get bad calls. A little bit better than we thought. I'm going to give you some quick trivia. Are you ready, Daily Dose listener? Here are some trivia for you. I want you to think about this. Which NCAA conference in college basketball is the youngest in the country right now? Okay. Which conference has played more top 25 non-conference games than any other Power 5 conference? Did you come up with that answer yet? Okay, which conference has played more non-conference games on the road than any other conference? Did you get the answer yet? Might not realize this, but the SEC is the answer to all three of those questions. The SEC is now 7-2 in the tournament. Hey, look, they're not the Pac-12. They're not even the Big 12. We knew those conferences would be good. But let me ask you this. Who out there had three SEC teams in the Sweet 16? Because Florida, South Carolina, and Kentucky are all in the Sweet 16. Not sure we expected that. They're a little bit better than we thought. Our last worst than we thought. I've got to put this one on the player decisions. Been some really, really bad player decisions. And look, I realize these players are young. So many underclassmen are playing the majority of the minutes in this tournament. But how many times do you see a team down by four with like 10 seconds remaining, and instead of driving in and getting the layup and, you know, fouling right away, they take the three? Who cares if you make it? You're still down by a point. And you probably didn't make it. Most of the ones I've been watching, they didn't make it either. It didn't help you. Go get a high percentage shot. How many times have we seen with the game on the line, with the season hanging in the balance, we see a kid with a little pullback fadeaway three-pointer from 30 feet? You're not Steph Curry. Go run some offense, move the ball around, and get a better look. That's not the shot I want with the game on the line. As a coach, I want the best passer making the best pass to the best shooter coming off the best screen from our best screener. That's the shot I want. I sure don't want you with a pullback fadeaway three at the top of the key from like 30 feet out. I can get that shot literally anytime we want to. That's not the shot I want with the game on the line. And we've seen a number of teams do that throughout this tournament. Some of the player decisions, I realize you don't have enough time to work with these guys. These college coaches don't. They just don't get the time. They only get a year or two with them. But man, some of the player decisions that we've seen have been absolutely brutal. Okay, let's take a look at the Sweet 16 matchups very, very quickly. On Thursday, here are the matchups you're going to see. Number 7, Michigan versus number 3, Oregon. And I think this is going to come down. Can Oregon defend that John Beilein offense? Watching what Michigan is doing right now has been extremely impressive. If you break down against that offense, you will not just give up baskets. You'll give up easy baskets or you'll get yourself in foul trouble. Oregon used a lot of energy to get past Rhode Island. Not sure they can do that against Michigan. I actually like Michigan in this game. Next game that night will be West Virginia, who is a 4 seed, against number 1 Gonzaga. How are the Zags going to handle the pressure against West Virginia? And based on what we saw against South Dakota State,
not too good.
Mark Few Gonzaga's head coach will have some time to prepare. The problem is you can't simulate that speed. I can't just go out to my practice squad. Your practice squad is not going to simulate that speed and that quickness. Here's the other question. How will the Mountaineers deal with that half-court offense of Gonzaga? Look for West Virginia to try to trap certain players and certain spots on the floor. I think we'll see that a lot. Here is the key that I want to watch in this game, though, and I think this is one of the more fun games we're going to see on Thursday night. Can West Virginia score to set up that full-court press? If they can't score, it'll make it a little bit tougher for them. I actually like West Virginia in this game. Talked about matchups, a good matchup, bad matchup. This is a bad matchup for Gonzaga. And maybe Mark Few comes up with a solution to the bad matchup. This is a bad matchup for the Bulldogs. Third game of the night will be number 4 Purdue against number 1 Kansas. This is a scary game if I'm Kansas. And I'll tell you why. Because right now, everyone is patting the Kansas Jayhawks on the back after they blew Michigan State out by 20. Everyone is sitting there going, you look like the best team in the tournament. Did you see the way they blew out Tom Izzo's squad? They had everything going. Josh Jackson looked great. Frank Mason is unstoppable. They can shoot it. They can go inside. They can go outside. I've got news for you. 19-year-old kids, and maybe that's one other thing we should have talked about. Don't forget this tournament is being played by a bunch of 18 and 19-year-olds. 19-year-old kids will believe that crap. They start thinking, you know what? I am pretty good. We are unstoppable. Purdue's got nothing for us. Don't sleep on Purdue. They don't have great guard play, but that front court is stout, and Jayhawks, do not get yourself in foul trouble. You get in foul trouble against those bigs that Purdue has, it's going to be a long night. I like Kansas, but if Kansas kids are going out and thinking, so which hotel do you think we'll stay at the Final Four? Will it be the Marriott? Probably the Marriott? I was going to start booking rooms now. Yeah, if you're thinking that way, and I know Bill Self will try to guard against that. He'll be telling them all week not to have that sort of mentality. That mentality will get Kansas beat. I like Kansas in this game if they keep their head on straight. Last matchup on Thursday night will be the surprising number 11 Xavier Musketeers against number 2 Arizona. Xavier, of course, they're going to sit back in that zone and they're going to dare Arizona to shoot the ball. Here's the worst case scenario for Arizona. If they hit a couple of threes early, that might sound insane to you. What are you talking about? They hit threes, they get some confidence, they're going to start feeling it. No, that's the worst thing in the world for them. Arizona needs to be patient and attack that Xavier zone and get inside and get those high percentage shots. If they hit a couple of threes earlier, they fall in love with that shot, they'll shoot themselves right out of this game, and they have no business losing to Xavier. These teams are very, very similar. It's easy to shoot threes against their zone. You can get that shot anytime you want. You better make them if you're going to take those. And if Arizona hits a couple early and falls in love with that, they could get themselves in trouble. I like Arizona in this game. I don't think that they'll do that. But if it's close late and they keep shooting threes, it could be a long night. Next round, if that goes the way that I think it might, you could have Kansas versus Michigan in the Elite Eight. That would be an excellent game. If Kansas gets through, I would take them against Michigan, but I would not sleep on the Wolverines. Arizona should get through easy enough. That West Virginia-Gonzaga game is going to be tough. Either way, I think Arizona would be the favorite in that Elite Eight game. That'd be a really fun Elite Eight on either of those. Friday night, you will have number 4 Butler versus number 1 North Carolina. Hey, North Carolina, this is piece of cake, isn't it? Well, maybe. Possibly. Which team dictates the tempo of this game? If this is a high-scoring game, North Carolina will win in a blowout. If it's a low-scoring game, Butler will have a chance. They'll have a shot in a close game. Butler doesn't give up transition points. They just don't. You know, it's funny. You'll see some of these announcers on there, and they'll be talking about transition points. And they'll say, you know, the biggest thing you got to do in transition is you've got to locate the ball. The biggest thing you've got to do in transition is you've got to start talking to your teammates. The biggest thing you've got to do for defensive transition? Get back. Get back on defense. How many times do you see the defense chasing the ball down the floor? Butler doesn't do that because they get back. Now, Butler doesn't give up transition points. This game, Butler versus North Carolina, I think it could be closer than people think. I still like North Carolina. Don't sleep on Butler. Butler's a little bit better than people think they are. Number 7, South Carolina versus number 3, Baylor will be the second game on Friday night. Baylor has the advantage. They're so long. Here's the thing I don't like about Baylor. I don't like their guard play. And the Gamecocks play hard. They play physical. If you saw that Duke game, South Carolina was just more physical. I don't know that they're more talented. They're just more physical, and they're just tough. I like Sendarius Thornwell. Very good at both ends. Can do a little bit of everything and doesn't get rattled. Baylor should be able to dominate the paint. They should be able to rebound. I guess I'll take Baylor. I would not want to play South Carolina right now. Frank Martin has that team playing very, very tough. Third game of the night might be the big one. Number 3 UCLA versus number 2 Kentucky. This could be an old-fashioned shootout. Both of these teams love to score points. I actually think Kentucky is a little bit better defensively. I think UCLA is a little better offensively. I actually like UCLA coach Steve Alford to outcoach John Calipari. We've seen John Calipari at times, maybe not do so good coaching in-game situations. Kentucky guard Malik Monk has not played very well yet. Wouldn't you think he'd be due for a big game at some point? I keep waiting for him to have a big game. He hasn't done it yet. This is an absolute toss-up. I like UCLA in this game. Then again, I did pick Kentucky in my bracket. Head says UCLA. I'm kind of rooting for Kentucky, so my bracket is right. I'll go with UCLA, I guess. Should be a really, really fun game. Have the popcorn ready Friday night for UCLA versus Kentucky. That should be phenomenal. Final game of the night will be number 8 Wisconsin against number 4 Florida. This is going to be more the defensive battle. And again, Florida is going to try to be playing fast, get up and down the floor, while Wisconsin will be trying to slow it down. Florida can't shoot that well from the outside. And that is a disadvantage for them. Wisconsin can't shoot free throws that well. But Bronson Koenig is a gamer, and I think he will give the Badgers the advantage. I will take Wisconsin in that final game. So if that was the case, you would have Baylor versus Wisconsin. Wouldn't that just be the kind of game that nobody would watch? And then it would end up being a great game, and everybody would be like, oh, yeah, that was a really good game. I didn't watch it. I don't know what happened. I could totally see that happening. And then that other game in the Elite Eight on this side would be probably UCLA versus North Carolina. That would feel like a Final Four game. Would be excellent, excellent game. March Madness, again, always, always so much fun. Gotta love March Madness. Hey, more movement going on in the NFL. We want to talk about where a few key players have ended up and who are the top free agents that are still out there and available, still looking for teams. The NBA playoffs are coming very, very quickly. We look at how those playoffs could look. And you got to make sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which way it's going to go. We will be right back.
Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon, and I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that, he's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case, and I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com. Think of the tender
things that we were working on. Do you realize that the NBA regular season only has about 15 games left? Talked about this just a little bit last week. Once NFL free agency hits, and then we've got March Madness, it seems like the NBA is still kind of going in the background. We're not paying as close attention to it, and all of a sudden those games are just ticking and ticking and ticking. These matchups will move around a little bit. But we can start getting a little bit of an idea of what we might expect when we get to the NBA playoffs. Let's take a look at some of the matchups that we could see in the NBA playoffs. Over on the east side, probably going to see number one Cleveland against number eight Milwaukee. You know, the Cavaliers have gone 3-1 against the Bucks. I don't see any reason that that's going to change. But if they do meet Milwaukee, if they do, couldn't you just see former Cavalier Matthew Dellavedova roll up one of his ex-teammates' knees as he makes one of those hustle plays? Those hustle plays that Cleveland fans loved so much when he was on their team, and now they will be booing incessantly because he's not on their team. Couldn't you see that? Like Dellavedova takes Kyrie Irving out at the knees. Oh, Dellavedova, we hate you now. We used to like you when you did that to other people. We loved it when you did that to someone else. Now we hate you. I could totally see that happening. Can't see Cleveland having any sort of a battle with Milwaukee. I think they would actually have a bigger battle if they were to see the team that's probably going to move up to number seven, maybe even number six, Miami. I think Miami could scare them a little bit. I think it'll probably be number two Boston versus number seven Miami. I've told you before, I like this Miami team. They don't really match up with the Celtics, though. That's a bad matchup with Boston. Boston has beaten them all three times that they've played him, and Miami has struggled to score any points against them. Here is the one thing that we kind of have to think about as we get closer to the playoffs. What do you do if you're Boston to hide Isaiah Thomas defensively? Hey, I'm watching Isaiah Thomas, and I think he is a phenomenal player. He's so good offensively. He can go off any given night. Having said that, he can't guard anyone, and he's only like 5'9". So 5'9 and can't guard anyone is a lot different than 6'5 and can't guard anyone. Boston's going to have to think about how they're going to hide him. And Miami seems like they would be the kind of team that would exploit that matchup and be like, hey, we're just going to beat up on him. If you're going to keep him in the game, yes, we have to try to find ways to stop him. He can't guard anybody for you, though. Boston versus Miami, I think, would actually be a little bit of an interesting series. I think Boston, that's probably just a good matchup for them. The other matchup we would see, number three, Washington versus number six, Indiana. I don't know what it is, but Washington really likes playing the Indiana Pacers. I would imagine, well, maybe I do know what it is. It's probably because Indiana doesn't really play any defense. But Washington this year has beaten them three times out of four tries. I think that probably makes it a lot of fun for Washington to play Indiana, because Indiana doesn't really, you know, play them that well. So I don't know if that would be a very good series. The final series over on the eastern side in the first round might be looking at number four Toronto against number five Atlanta. Now that could be a closer series than you might first think. Because when you see that, you say, man, Toronto, if they drop clear to the four, they'd be stuck playing Atlanta? Don't sleep on the Atlanta Hawks pulling the upset. No, I'm not saying that Atlanta's very good. I don't think they are. If you take a look at Atlanta's point differential, they're actually in the negatives. I'm not impressed with the Atlanta Hawks, but we don't know what Toronto is going to have. Does Kyle Lowry come back healthy after that wrist surgery? And how healthy can you come back from a wrist surgery? You're talking about your wrist. That's pretty important in the game of basketball. So I would give Atlanta a chance in that series. Has nothing to do with Atlanta. It certainly isn't because I think Atlanta is very good. I just don't know what I'm going to get from Toronto. I have no idea what to expect from the Raptors. Over on the East, I don't think it's quite as tight as it is over on the West. Not as many good teams. Let's shift over to the Western side. I know I told you, I still think it's going to be Portland. But right now, if you were to look at these playoff matchups, it would be number one Golden State versus number eight Denver. The Denver Nuggets did beat Golden State by 21 points just like a month ago. But if Kevin Durant is healthy, this would be the perfect matchup for the Golden State Warriors in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Because this would be the matchup that would get the Golden State Warriors rolling. Think about it. A team that is struggling to find their offense against a team that literally, not figuratively, literally plays no defense whatsoever. Hey, you're feeling a little bit under the weather, Golden State? The Denver Nuggets will cure what ails you. That is why I think it's really, really important that Golden State finds a way to stay in that number one spot. They don't want to drop to 2. I don't think they really can drop to 3. They don't want to drop to 2 because you don't want to see that next level team. Denver would be a perfect, perfect matchup. In fact, I would guess that the Warriors are actually wearing some Nuggets gear right now. Aww. They're hoping. They would rather see Denver than they were Portland. Portland could be a pain. I don't want to see them. I don't want to try to chase them around. And now they've got Nurkic on that team? No. I'll take Denver. They might get up and down the floor and score some points, but that's a way better fit for us than having to get into a physical battle. Number 2, San Antonio, right now, would be facing number 7, Memphis. See what a difference that is? To go from the Denver Nuggets to facing the Memphis Grizzlies? That would be a much, much different matchup for Golden State. That's why they want to stay number 1. Number 2, San Antonio, you know, for all of the talk about Cleveland and for all the talk about Golden State, San Antonio Spurs are just quietly waiting in those weeds. They're just sitting there. I will say this, though. I'm not sure they want to see Memphis either. Yes, they swept them last year, but Memphis is that kind of team that just makes you play ugly. They wear you out. If I'm San Antonio, I'm trying to get to that number one spot too, because I'd rather face Denver than face Memphis. And I don't think they would lose to Memphis. I think they would beat them. I just think it would take a little bit out of them to beat them. That's not what I want if I'm San Antonio right now. Next matchup would be number 3, the Houston Rockets, against the number 6, Oklahoma City Thunder. Look, I don't care who you are. I will say this right now. It is March 22nd. I will say this right now. I don't care who I am in the NBA right now. I don't want to see Houston in the playoffs. I really don't. I don't know that they're going to beat you, but the pace that they play at, the points that they score, I'll be honest, I am excited for the NBA playoffs this year, and one of the biggest reasons that I'm excited for the playoffs, I want to see what Houston does in the postseason. Can they play at this same level? We know. We've seen teams in the past. They are up and down the floor. They are flying all over the place in the regular season. They get to the postseason, and all of a sudden, transition changes. We limit what you can do. We're slowing everything down. You're not going to get out and run and score 120 on us tonight. It changes a little bit. Can Houston play at that same level? We're going to find out. If they faced Oklahoma City, I think that's a pretty easy win for Houston. Maybe Oklahoma City gets a game. I think Houston would match up favorably with them because I don't think Oklahoma City just has the people. I would like the Rockets in that matchup. But the Houston Rockets are going to be fun to watch in this postseason. Final matchup that we would see, at least right now, as you're listening to this, you might be looking through and say, well, that would change just a little bit. And look, Golden State lost a game and now San Antonio's the one. Right now, this is what the matchup is. I realize it can change. Right now, this is what the matchup is. And the current matchup in the final matchup in the West would be number 4 Utah versus the number 5 Los Angeles Clippers. Is there a bigger disappointment in the NBA right now than the Los Angeles Clippers? They're getting ready to face some very major off-season moves. And it's like they haven't done anything with this. Hey, it's our last stand. J.J. Redick's about to be a free agent. Gonna figure out what to do with Chris Paul. Blake Griffin could go somewhere else. I expected this Los Angeles Clippers team to come out, and I realize they've had some injuries. So has everyone. They haven't come out and played very well. And they can't beat Golden State, no matter what they seem to do. Disappointed in the Clippers this year. I expected them to be maybe the 2, not the 5. Who saw them being the 5? Los Angeles Clippers, taking a big, big step back. Just like we see certain NFL teams kind of geared for success in the postseason. They run the football. They've got a big offensive line. They can grind out the clock. They can control the clock. There are certain teams that are kind of built. They could have success in the postseason. I honestly think that the Utah Jazz could be the kind of team that could have postseason success. And it's been a while since we've seen Utah have really, you know, any success. This team could be that way. They defend. They get pretty high percentage shots. Head coach Quinn Snyder, he took some lumps early in his coaching career. He has figured some things out. This team rebounds. I really like what Utah is doing. They could be a little bit of a dangerous team as we do get into the playoffs. And you know, the Utah Jazz have something pretty big to play for. Gordon Hayward, their best player, is about to become a free agent. Now, let's see. I realize they don't have any money, but who has a bunch of picks to deal and possibly get him, maybe make some player moves, maybe move some people around, and possibly try to get Gordon Hayward in the offseason? Yeah. Gordon Hayward's college coach, Brad Stevens, and the Boston Celtics. Couldn't you see Gordon Hayward going to Boston and playing? Wouldn't that almost be kind of a perfect fit? Seems like that would be a really nice fit. Utah needs to win in hopes of keeping Gordon Hayward in the Utah Jazz jersey. So they do have something to play for. The NBA postseason is going to be really, really fun to watch, and it is coming very, very quickly. Got to shift over and talk a little NFL. Former Green Bay Packers running back Eddie Lacy signed a contract with the Seattle Seahawks last week. Yes, sushi restaurants in the Seattle-Tacoma metro area were celebrating like they had just won the Powerball. Of course, we all know that Eddie Lacy has struggled with his weight more than Oprah Winfrey. So, to try to kind of keep an eye on that weight, the Seattle Seahawks have included a few weight bonuses in Lacy's contract to keep him from just completely losing his mind and like robbing a hostess truck. So, they gave him 7 separate weigh-in points at which Eddie Lacy can make $55,000 for each of them. That would equal out to about a total of nearly $400,000 just for keeping his weight in check. Doesn't that just sound completely crazy? So here are his numbers. Here's what they're paying him to do. In May, this is so crazy that a team would actually do this. Eddie Lacy gets his bonus if he stays under 255. 255! He gets 2.5 spins, and he gets his money. June, July, and August, he has to be under 250. And then from September until December, Eddie Lacy has to be under 245. Now, Eddie Lacy was 231 when he was in college. But since being in the NFL, dude has gotten up close to 270. 270? Let's get one thing on the table. Let's be real, real clear. Eddie Lacy isn't earning a single one of these bonuses. Think about it. You're asking him to be low in May. Let's see. Memorial Day. Nope. He's got the barbecue Memorial Day. June, July. Now, you would think with the off-season workouts, summer workouts, working out in the heat, but he's also got July 4th. Again, more barbecue. They have some really, really nice weather. I know Seattle gets a bad rap for the rain and the stuff that they get up there. The summer months in Seattle are gorgeous. You're going to get some barbecue. You're going to get some great seafood. You're going to get some really good food up there in June, July, and August. I don't know. And then September, December, you're getting into the holiday season. You're going to ask Eddie Lacy to be down under 245 during the holidays? Are you kidding me? That's like asking Johnny Manziel to stay clean on April 20th. I've got bad news for you. That's not going to happen. Woo. Seahawks. Interesting. Seahawks are going from beast mode to obese mode. Just like that. Speaking of beast mode, Oakland Raiders. Seems like they have some interest in Marshawn Lynch.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
But you know, the Oakland Raiders have got to be irate with whichever NFL source outed them for having an interest in Marshawn Lynch. Remember, the Seahawks running back is retired. There has been rumors and speculation that he has always wanted to play for the Oakland Raiders. Raiders say they have an interest in Marshawn Lynch. Okay, who cares? I think it was Ian Rappaport that reported it. I could be wrong. Maybe it was Adam Schefter. It was one of those guys. They reported that the Raiders were interested in possibly bringing Marshawn Lynch out of retirement and that maybe he could still play for them. What's the big deal? Who cares? If he wants to come out of retirement, go ahead. Who cares? Well, the NFL might care. They could care. See, here's the thing. The Seattle Seahawks still own the rights to Marshawn Lynch. The Oakland Raiders saying that they have an interest in Marshawn Lynch could possibly, at the NFL's discretion, that could be tampering. I can't sit there and say, yeah, I'd really like to have Tom Brady. We're really thinking we'd like to bring in Tom Brady this next year, maybe make a trade for him. I can't do that kind of thing. You can't do the same thing with Marshawn Lynch. They still own the rights. What would have been ideal for the Raiders would have been to see, can Marshawn Lynch quietly go about getting the Seattle Seahawks to release his rights? Then the Raiders could sign him. Now, not only do the Seahawks know the Raiders want him, now they have a little bit of a price tag and say, well, we know you guys want him. Yeah, why don't you make a trade for him? What are you going to give us? Because we don't have to deal him. He's still sitting there with our rights on him. We don't have to do anything with him. Not only now might the Raiders have to pay something for him, they could face some sort of discipline from the NFL for even talking about him, for even mentioning that they have an interest in him, because you can't do that. Sometimes in the past, it has come out. That sort of thing has cost teams draft picks. Maybe, maybe not. Depends on what kind of evidence that they have of the Raiders being interested in Marshawn Lynch. Some of the best free agents that are still available. We've seen a multitude of these free agents now in the NFL pick their team, sign with their team, get their contract, whatever it might be. But when you're talking about now, what is this, 3 weeks into the game, into free agency? Right now, what you are seeing is the pride of the athlete meeting the cutthroat checkbook of the NFL franchise, and we have to see which one is going to give first. Because the athlete is like, man, I really think I should be getting $10 million. And the NFL team's like, yeah, we're not giving you $10 million. You can just sit there and wait. I've got $6 million bucks, and that's all I've got. So now we have to see which one bends first. Let's take a look at some of the best free agents that are still available out on the open market. Nick Mangold, we talked about him a few weeks ago. He's been one of the best centers in the NFL, but he's 33 years old, and he's banged up. And no one is going to want to pay a huge price for him. So here's the question. How bad does he really want to still play? Does he want to play bad enough to maybe take a little bit of a less contract? Or is he okay hanging it up? Right now, doesn't seem like he's getting too much in the way of offers. Nick Mangold could be done. Nose tackle Jonathan Hankins. Now, Hankins is coming off a torn pectoral muscle. And that could be scaring some teams away. Well, that and the fact that Jonathan Hankins says he wants $10 million a year. Wait a second. In 2016, Jonathan Hankins had 3 sacks. You want $10 million a year? Yeah, I don't think so. The Giants have said that they want to try to keep him. They don't have $10 million a year to give him. They're not willing to pay that much for him, but right now, it doesn't seem like anyone else is willing to give him that much money either. So either he, again, lowers his expectations, or some team's going to have to step up and say, yeah, okay, I mean, Cleveland, the Browns have money. Couldn't they step up and pay him a bunch of money? Granted, $10 million, but to go to Cleveland, it's probably $20 million. I don't know. Either way, Jonathan Hankins is not getting signed yet. Wide receiver Josh Gordon is still unsigned. And I think it's primarily because teams don't know exactly what to make of him. There is no question Josh Gordon's talent when he actually gets on the field. But you think about the DUI, all the failed drug tests, all the suspensions that have kept him off the field. Yeah, I don't know if I want to give him any money. In the past 5 seasons, Josh Gordon has played in just 35 games. I don't know what I'm getting. That's kind of buyer beware. Now, in those 35 games, he has 14 touchdowns, and he averages 17 yards per catch. Here's the other thing NFL teams are waiting to see. Does he get reinstated? If he gets reinstated by the league, he's going to get another chance with someone. It might not be for the amount of money that he would like, but someone will give him a chance because he's just too talented. Granted, we probably know how this story ends, though. And the story probably has Johnny Manziel, hookers, and cocaine as leading characters in the story.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Now that the Minnesota Vikings have signed former Raiders running back Latavius Murray, Adrian Peterson is going somewhere. I don't know where you're going to go, but you're not going to be staying in Minnesota. Peterson says he has received a number of phone calls from NFL teams. NFL teams say, yeah, we haven't called. So I don't know who it is that called. I would like to hear Peterson say, here's who called. Let's see, I got a call from the Jets and the Lions and the Bengals and who. I'd like to hear who he says is calling him, because NFL says we're not calling him. My biggest problem with Adrian Peterson at this stage in his career was that this past season, when the Minnesota Vikings lost quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, it seemed like the perfect time for Adrian Peterson to step up and carry that team. He tore up his knee again. He played in just three games. Can you depend on Adrian Peterson for anything ever? I don't know. It seems to me at this stage, Adrian Peterson and Tony Romo should probably just retire and maybe open up a rehab center. Aww. Wouldn't that seem like a better fit? Get to help people. Kind of like what we do here at The Daily Dose. Hey, just a quick reminder, make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/Daily Dose and order. Loot Crate delivers pop culture crates. They've got exclusive items. They've got apparel from your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. You can go get a crate. You can go get a subscription of crates. You can just pick and choose individual items that you like on the Loot Crate site. That March crate is out. The theme is primal. There's some items from X-Men, from Overwatch, from Predator. You can always also go back and order some of the past crates that are there. Best part about ordering is we give you 10% off when you put Daily Dose in that coupon box. They'll give you 10% off your entire order. We don't keep any money from Loot Crate. We forward anything we get to the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund, help some kids get involved in sports. So be sure that you head over to Loot Crate, place your order. You'll love the merchandise you get, and don't forget, you do get some good karma because you help some kids get involved in sports. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top five. You know, Villanova couldn't win back-to-back championships. They had a chance, but they couldn't get it done, as we see in this clip from CBS Sports.
So they can hold on to it if they get a rebound.
Nigel Hayes. Wow. Rebound, DiVincenzo.
Oh, they double-teamed him.
Wisconsin will go to New York City.
But Villanova had a chance to win back-to-back titles. And that's not that common. We don't see that many teams win it all, return a good collection of those players that won it all, and have a shot to win it again. Do you realize, in 78 seasons of the NCAA tournament, just 8 different teams have managed to win back-to-back titles. It's tough to do. Usually, that first one, you kind of scrape, you kind of surprise, you kind of, I don't want to say luck your way into, but, and then the second one, you return some people, now there's higher expectations. That second one is even tougher. That's what we saw from Villanova this year. It's just a little bit too much. You get an injury like they did. You have some guys leave like they did. It's just a little bit tough to win back-to-back titles. So today, our Daily Dose Top 5, we count down the last 5 teams that actually have got it done. The last 5 teams to win back-to-back national championships in college basketball. Men's college basketball. Otherwise, we just have a list of just all Connecticut. I'm not doing that. All right, number 5 on our list. The 2006-2007 Florida Gators. Billy Donovan led that group to kind of a surprise title in 2006. If you remember right, it was the UConn Huskies that were favored in 2006. And then they got knocked out by George Mason. Those matchups, we don't match well against George Mason. Florida matched up really well against George Mason. And then they managed to win another title in 2007. You'll remember some of those players. You remember Corey Brewer, Al Horford, Joakim Noah. You might have forgotten guys like Torian Green, Chris Richard, and sharpshooter Lee Humphrey that hit just about every single shot he took. You know, they beat UCLA in 2006, and then they beat Greg Oden and Ohio State in 2007. It's the last time we saw a team win back-to-back titles. Number 4 on our list, last 5 teams that have won back-to-back championships, we got to go clear back to 1991 and 1992. The Duke Blue Devils shocked the world when they took down the undefeated UNLV Running Rebels. Remember, Duke was that big underdog when they played in the Final Four. They had met UNLV in the national championship the previous season, and UNLV had put one on them, beat them by 30. But Mike Krzyzewski told that team, the Rebels are beatable, and we're going to beat them. And they believed him. Who knew? Christian Laettner had 28. Bobby Hurley had 12 and 7 assists. Brian Davis had 15, and a freshman named Grant Hill had 11, and Duke knocked off UNLV. You kind of forget that UNLV wasn't the championship game. You know, I give Mike Krzyzewski a ton of credit, not just for beating UNLV. As impressive as that was, UNLV was undefeated. They were rolling. They were like a pro team playing against college teams. But the fact that Duke went on and beat a pretty good Kansas team in the final, that might even be more impressive. And then the next season, all those guys came back just about, and Duke went 34-2 and beat the Michigan Fab Five and won their back-to-back title. Number three on our list, back-to-back champions. This isn't actually fair, because this team did a little more than just go back-to-back. The UCLA Bruins from 1967 to 1973 went back-to-back. The Bruins won seven titles in a row. And it wasn't just one guy. It wasn't just Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It was Mike Warren. It was Mike Lynn. It was Curtis Rowe, Lynn Shackelford, Henry Bibby, Steve Patterson, Sidney Wicks, Larry Farmer, Bill Walton, Jamal and Keith Wilkes, Marcus Johnson. UCLA in this time was the most dominating program in an era in sports history. Absolutely amazing what they did those late 60s, early 70s at UCLA. Number two on our list. You want more proof that UCLA wasn't completely dominant? Yeah, remember that seven titles in a row? It actually came right after them going back-to-back in 64 and 65. And you can't just say, well, yeah, because John Wooden had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He just, because he had him. And because he had Bill Walton. If he didn't have those guys, no, because this was before that. Prior to getting Kareem, prior to getting Walton, John Wooden led a team with Walt Hazard, Gail Goodrich, and Keith Erickson to an undefeated season and a championship over Duke in 1964. Then the next year, they went 27-2 and beat Michigan for their second championship in a row. Amazing what UCLA was doing back in the 60s. Yes, we know. Somebody was paying a little bit of money, and I still struggle because John Wooden was such a good guy and doing things the right way, and still have a hard time with that. But can't deny what UCLA did on the floor. Number one, again, we're only going five back. The last team that won back-to-back championships. We go back to 1961. This team actually won three championships. The Cincinnati Bearcats won three in a row. They beat Ohio State and Jerry Lucas in 61 and 62. And then they beat Loyola University from Illinois in 1963. Now, when you hear this, you hear that Cincinnati won those, your first thought is that those titles took place with the incredible Oscar Robertson leading the way, right? Actually, no. Oscar Robertson was gone after 1960. Yes, he kind of got him in a position to do this, but he was already gone. He never got the Bearcats to a championship. They lost twice in the Final Four. They lost once in the Elite Eight. This team was actually led by Carl Bolden, Paul Hogue, Paul Wisenhahn, and Tom Thacker. It is very, very tough to win back-to-back championships in a single elimination tournament. You've got to block out all the distractions. You've got to stay healthy. Got to be a little bit lucky, and you've got to be really, really good to do that. Hey, next week, I've got something a little bit different. I've got something a little bit special for you. It is going to be a little bit different, I won't lie, but I do think you'll enjoy it. Be sure that you stop by and check out the Daily Dose next week. And please go to wherever it is that you download the show, click that little subscribe or follow button. And if you do follow us on blogtalkradio.com, you get the episodes a little quicker than everyone else does. And don't forget, you can always click share and send the podcast to someone to let them know to check it out. Hey, feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. You can always email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter and do any shopping that you need to do over at lootcrate.com/dailydose. If you enter Daily Dose in that coupon box, we'll get you 10% off your order. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Enjoy the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. I will see you all next week.